Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Hope you're doing well. My name's Tim Wildman, and Ed Battagliano, co-hosting with me, will be here for another 25 minutes or so. Walker Wildman, also in studio with us. Walker, what have we posted on our Facebook page recently here?
Well, we are running Facebook Live, and I've also posted the article about Trump planning to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Okay. Be interesting to see whether he follows through with that. Is that a decision he can make alone?
From what I understand, he can just direct it to be done.
Well, because Congress has already voted to recognize Jerusalem.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, Steve Jordahl from American Family News and OneNewsNow.com is with us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, Steve, before we jump into the hard news, just to talk about the weather for just a minute. You were talking about the polar vortex that's approaching, or we're within 48 hours of
it's coming. It's going to be cold this weekend through most of America, the north.
Dangerously cold. I mean, there's going to be some people die because of this.
Well, I hope not, but I'm looking at my good friend Google here tells me that in Colorado Springs, my former home, on Saturday, it's going to be snowing in a high of 9 degrees, looking for a -2 for a low, and then wind chills beyond that.
That's what I'm talking about. Dangerous to go outside.
Yeah, and you add snow and rain in that, or sleet down the roads. That's when you really get into danger, or you have people out. For some reason, I've heard these horror stories of people hunting, waterfowl hunting in boats. You know, in 15-degree weather,
right?
0-degree weather, and you know, you fall. If you get wet in that kind of temperature, you have to get rushed.
You would die pretty quick from hypothermia. Right. But I'm just thinking about the millions and millions and millions of people who live in the north part of our country. It's going to be cold enough in the south, but you're talking about the -8, the high in Minneapolis on Saturday, I think it is. So, you know, this. Don't mean to make fun of this situation, but this the global warming crowd, you know, this is just not helping their case.
I think they have a conference in the Twin Cities this weekend, probably.
Probably. You can't take, in all seriousness, a gauge of quote climate change or global warming on a snapshot of time. You know, you've
it
got
changes.
I understand that. I'm just saying that. It's hard to argue with the American people when we see these brutal winters.
Perception starts to play into it. The argument is climate and weather are not the same. And, you know, I think most thinking people understand that. But it does – the perception is, and it makes it hard to make the case, that man-made global warming is going on.
When we have polar vortexes.
Two out of the last three winters, we've had the polar vortex.
Remember in the 70s, it was global cooling. And then in the 2000s, it was global warming. They just decided it's going to be climate change. But, that way, whichever way it goes, they're covered.
But not only is it perception, is the perception along with the satellite data has not, temperatures have not risen with the satellite data in over 10 years. So you add that with polar vortexes every other year.
And the National Weather Service keeps redefining their past records to make them cooler so that it looks like we're warming.
Or something like that. All right. What else is in the news there, Steve?
Well, we got a couple things going. Why don't we start, since we're talking a little bit lighthearted. Our friends at the Media Research Center have decided that they are going to have pity on a very vulnerable part of our nation, and that is the many liberals who are becoming unhinged over this election of Donald Trump. And so they have decided to start a Save the Snowflakes campaign.
Now tell people, other than the kind that come through a polar vortex, what they mean by the word snowflake.
Well, it's a precious, coddled, little, tender soul that
It melts easily.
Melts easily under any kind of pressure. So our friends at the Media Research Center have decided to put this campaign together. I had my own take on it yesterday, which played a couple times today on the news, but I thought I'd let you guys have a listen and see what you think about this snowflake campaign.
The Media Research Center would like to draw your attention to a tragedy of minuscule proportions.
Thousands of snowflakes have found themselves personally victimized by the recent election of Donald Trump as President of the United States.
Yes, across college campuses around the country, countless college students are bereft and grieving the election of a Republican.
I cannot believe this is happening. I'm literally about to kill myself, and I'm not kidding. You better fix it right now.
This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, the humanity.
Brittany Hughes of the Media Research Center explains the tongue-in-cheek effort.
The snowflakes are melting. It's horrible. Our campuses are turning into giant global warming puddles.
And it's not just college students who are melting down. Celebrity snowflake millionaire Miley Cyrus was in tears the day after the election.
That in her lifetime, she deserves to be the first female president. And that's what makes me so sad.
We're sad with you, Miley. The Media Research Center is noting how some schools are dealing with the crisis.
Cornell recently hosted a cry-in where snowflakes could drink hot chocolate and come to terms with the unspeakable tragedy of not getting their way.
The University of Pennsylvania offered puppies and kittens for snowflakes to cuddle.
MRC would like to note this tempest in a teacup.
Clearly, democracy should not involve losing elections.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve, for that.
That was tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but all those sound bites were real.
Well, the Hindenburg was real, yes, but no, the girl crying, Miley Cyrus, they were over the election. Yes, they were.
Walker, can you put that on our Facebook page?
He can't. He can if I give him
audio.
Yeah, I'll give him the audio.
Okay, Steve, so maybe after the show.
Yeah.
But Steve, you're going to get that audio?
Are you networked into our network there?
No, but I will be.
Okay. I'll get it to
so people can click on and listen to that again so we'll put it on our Today's Issues Facebook page. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was priceless. Clearly democracy should not involve losing election.
That's right.
These poor people.
Yeah.
You know, and all these celebrities who said they were going to leave the country if Donald Trump was elected, and they were serious.
Did you see the one that's out? The celebrity. It's a bunch of celebrities, mostly B-list. Celebrities now begging 37 electors, Republican electors, please switch your vote. That was. I mean, I'm talking about the gal who was in Will and Grace. She was in it. Several from MASH and from some
Will
of these
Ferrell, not Will Ferrell, the other Ferrell, the guy that played Trapper John.
Yes, some from the show West Wing.
Yeah, Martin Sheen.
Yes,
is in it, and it's truly and you know what along the same lines, B-lister Chelsea Handler. I don't know if any of you know who she is.
Oh, but, sure.
Comedian.
I saw a post that she put on Facebook. In all seriousness, she was outside of her apartment in sunglasses because she'd been crying. And she said, it's dead serious, I was going to leave the country, but when I came to work yesterday, all my staff told me, Chelsea, you need to stay and fight. So I've decided not to leave the country for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They all said, what was his name? Samuel Jackson?
Samuel Jackson.
The actor. You know, he said he was going to, he used a more colorful expression than
so.
He said he was going to South Africa if Donald Trump won. A lot of these people, I mean, there was like 15 or 20 or more pretty high-profile celebrities. They all backed out.
One of the hosts.
Donald Trump was elected, they all said.
But they have good reasons.
We're going to stay in it. No, we really didn't mean that. Anyway.
One of the hosts on Fox, I think it was on one of the guys on the Five, actually offered to pay for an airline ticket one way to anybody who would leave the country. He would pay their moving expenses one way, provided they didn't come back for a couple years.
I guess they don't think it's going to get too bad. Or else they would have followed through with their threats to leave. I was hoping
they have to stay and fight. Would.
Yeah,
it's Chelsea Handler. I don't even did she. I don't did she. Sell, she had a show on some network.
She's famous for being famous. She's a comedian. She takes on. Yeah, she has an irreverent take on everybody. Probably not somebody that I would want to point any of our listeners to.
Those kind of people. Now, I would like make an exception for people like Jon Stewart, who actually Jon Stewart is very, very smart.
Yeah,
and he was actually a very tough interviewer. So I'd put people like that in a separate
category. Why did he say he's leaving too?
No. I'm just saying in terms of a lot of these people like Chelsea Handler, they're just what the Bible calls mockers and scoffers. That's what, like Stephen Colbert. They just mock people. That's what they do.
Somehow.
And I don't, you know, I'm not saying they don't ever come up with anything funny. But to me, if that's what your shtick is, you just mock people and scoff. That's,
you know, celebrity is a weird thing. I've often been astounded when people come and tell me, you know, I met a celebrity the other day, and do you know what? I was so impressed. They were polite.
Yes.
It's like if a celebrity does a normal everyday thing, it's like the best thing in the world that.
She was just so genuine. Celebrity she was buying wheat
is weird. And
like
I should probably ask you about this, Tim. You're celebrated and famous. What is it like?
Tell my wife that, if you would.
When you're trying to watch a football game, right?
Go put the garbage out. You know? All right, Steve, we are out of time. Tell us at onenewsnow.com.
Onenewsnow.com, the top story right now at onenewsnow.com is CNN is taking on Donald Trump. No surprise.
Yeah. So really?
Yes, they are.
CNN. Thank you. Breaking news.
Yes.
Thank
Dog
you.
Dog bites man.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Now, don't forget, Steve, give that audio of that funny story you did while ago to Walker, and he'll put it up on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Our Facebook page for Today's Issues on AFR. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano and Walker Wildman. Ed, you want to introduce our next guest?
Yes, very happy to introduce Austin Roos, who's president of CFAM. That's the Center for Family and Human Rights. CFAM is a research institute focusing on international legal and social policy. Austin, welcome to Today's Issues.
Thanks so much for having me, gentlemen.
Well, Austin, tell us a little bit about CFAM. Now, you have been, I mean, I've been reading your stuff for well over a decade, maybe longer. I mean, maybe speaking to how old we both are. But you guys have a particular focus on what happens at the United Nations outside America when it comes to pro-life issues, pro-family issues. A lot of us sometimes think that this culture war is just inside you know, the United States, but it's actually a worldwide effort. Talk a little bit about CFAM.
Well, CFAM, we started CFAM way back in 1997 in order to monitor and try to affect the pro-life and pro-family debate at the UN. You know, the radical feminists decamped to the UN, gosh, you know, a quarter century ago because they wanted to change international law to kind of backdoor countries and force them to accept abortion and the LGBT agenda through international law. And so we've been involved in the negotiations of UN documents going on 20 years, and with you know our partners in the NGO world and foreign governments. And when there's a friendly government here in the United States, we've been quite successful in blocking an international right to abortion and redefinitions of the family and also stopping this new idea of sexual orientation and gender identity as a new category of non-discrimination in international law. So, you know, actually, the UN is actually, that is to say, the General Assembly is actually pretty good on our issues, you know, because there are a lot of countries who are willing to stand up and say no.
Well, Austin, you know, there are, you know, a lot of people, you know, liberals usually, bemoan the fact of not only Western colonialism, but they will talk about ideological colonialism. In other words, you know, Westerners have tried to take over other countries and spread their own, you know, whatever the, you know, fill in the blank of the, you know, the you know, flaws that we have in the West. But there's actually a great deal of that same kind of ideological colonialism, ironically, coming from the left. So that, you have the United Nations, you have Western countries telling countries in Africa, for example, that they need to legalize same-sex marriage or they need to promote abortion. So is there any attempt on the part of these leftists to reconcile the internal contradiction, or is this just the will to power?
Well, you know, as one of my, as Chris Plant often says on the radio, if they didn't have double standards, the left would have no standards at all. You know, of course they don't see their own hypocrisy. And we have been using the phrase sexual colonialism, sexual imperialism for 20 years, because they well and truly are trying to export and impose their, you know, the Western sexual revolution on the rest of the world. You know, if you sit down with diplomats from the developing world, there is no end to their complaining about how the United States, in particular, UN bureaucrats in the European Union, are trying to force UN style family planning, abortion, the LGBT agenda. I mean, the whole mess that has caused, you know, I just point out that the sexual revolution has a very substantial body count, and the body count is growing ever higher, and all they want is more and more and more of it, and they want to export it to the developing world. So, yeah, absolutely. Pope Francis talks all the time about ideological colonialism. The African bishops talk all the time about ideological colonialism. And one of the things we have been advising the Trump transition, I'm on the Catholic Advisory Committee of the Trump transition, as well as the pro-life committee, and we have been advising. I mean, first and foremost, let's take down the rainbow flags that are flying U.S. embassies around the world, especially in Muslim countries. Samantha Power, U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, says constantly that LGBT is now a part of the DNA of American foreign policy. They have imported they set up a congressionally mandated office on religious freedom in the State Department to report regularly on the state of religious freedom around the world. And they have imported LGBT issues into that office. That's never been allowed by Congress, but they did it anyway. So that ought to be taken out of there. They have fired people from the Office of Religious Freedom in the State Department who objected to that. They have fired people around the federal government who have objected to the importation of the LGBT agenda into the federal government.
Let me interrupt you there, because I don't want us to run out of time. I want you to talk about this. Now, one of the articles that I sent around here in the last week or so was an article that you wrote for Crisis Magazine, and I get their couple of stories every day in my inbox because they just have some great thinkers there. And you wrote an article, the title of it is Donald Trump and the Canary in the LGBT Coal Mine. Tell us the story, if you will, because it springboards nicely off of what you were just talking about. What happened? You discuss in your story what happened to a lawyer named Scott Blosch. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Tell us that story.
Well, Scott Blosch was a very loyal Bush appointee. He worked in the Justice Department, and then he was appointed to run the Office of Special Counsel in the White House, which is a small prosecutorial office that defends whistleblowers. And one of the first things that he did was the Clinton administration within that office had incorporated sexual orientation as a protected category in the work that they do. And this is not a part of federal law. This is, as you know, there has been great debates in the Congress about incorporating sexual orientation, hate crimes legislation. It's been rejected, but they did it anyway in this particular office. And so Scott took it out as a protected category in the Office of Special Counsel, and he was excoriated. He was one of the very early scalps that was taken by LGBT activists. I mean, sadly, the Bush administration turned on them. I mean, at the time that he did it, I wasn't sure how wise it was, because it was very clear that the Bush administration did not want that fight at that time. You know, instead of manning up and defending him, they threw him under the bus. And he was, they ended up, you know, he was prosecuted for this, that, and the other. I mean, it was just a terrible, terrible mess. And they persecuted a very good man. And he was one of the very early victims of you know, the new McCarthyism. That is to say, people who stand up for traditional values. And so that was one of the very early tests that we may see increasingly in the federal government, of people who are trying to stand up for what the law says and for traditional values. Now, a lot of time has passed since then, and the militant LGBTs have burrowed in deep into the federal government. I mean, there's a very organized network of LGBTs in the federal government, especially in the State Department, and they're gonna protect their turf, and they're gonna take scalps. There is no question about that. So that's why it was vitally important that the person who took over at the State Department, for instance, had to be a very strong person on this, and we worry about Rex Tillerson. And I worry a little bit about Donald Trump. Is he willing to fight this fight? I don't know.
Let me just ask you this, because we got about a minute and a half or so left. Let me just ask you in a general sense, and then if you could add anything to your discussions with the Trump transition team, how well do you think Republican leaders overall, just in general, understand the issue and the threat to religious liberty? And then what do you know in terms of the Trump campaign or the Trump administration?
Well, you know, it's hit or miss on whether folks really understand the threat to religious liberty. First of all, I think that religious liberty is a very important issue, but it's also almost the smallest boat that we could be in to defend. You know, it's like the smallest piece of territory. We ought to be out much further advancing our agenda. And therefore, I think it's almost like a rear guard action, and that's the thing that makes me the most worried about all of this. I think that I don't know if Donald Trump honestly gives two hoots about this particular issue. However, I saw him many times talk about the importance of religious liberty. Although I was at the pastors' meeting in New York City, where there were 1,000 of us there. I don't know if you all were there. He asked point blank questions about LGBT issues, and he dodged every single time. So I'm not optimistic on this
Austin,
particular issue.
Austin, thanks for being on with us. Tim Wildman here, American Family Association. Appreciate your work. I think there was one question that I remember asked of him about this issue. I think it was Kelly Shackelford, when religious freedom conflicts with the sexual revolution, who wins? Basically, was it? And he said, "You're going to like my judges." Basically,
that's one thing that we can hold on to is his judges.
Yeah.
I think are going to be very good.
But I agree with you. I don't, him being a New Yorker, businessman who, I don't even know if he fully understands this issue.
Yeah.
But I think he's being surrounded by people who do. So hopefully those folks will get to him and make him understand what's at stake.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've spent the last 7 years working for Steve Bannon.
Austin, we've got to go. We've got about 10 seconds left.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Austin, for being on the program with us, okay?
We'll have you back on again soon, okay, brother?
Okie doke.
Thank you. We'll end on that okie-doke note. See you tomorrow.